You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? It's Bucky Brooks, and I am hosting the Move the Sticks show, but I got a partner, a new partner for the day. Lance Z is in, replacing DJ. DJ's out there doing all things Daniel Jeremiah. I think he might be moving his kid in and doing some other stuff. So we got LZ sitting in, but it is a perfect day to have LZ, because when LZ comes, he brings all that H-Town swag. And we have big news coming from the NFL today. The NFL and Deshaun Watson have agreed to a deal on a disciplinary settlement. As part of the agreement, he will sit out 11 games and pay a $5 million fine. That means he is set to return week 13 against who?
Hey, Texans! And all the talk had been busted. Yeah. I'm telling you this, though, Bucky, it had always been about the league wanted him suspended long enough that the Texans weren't part of the mix. It didn't make sense to me because, look, Deshaun's going to get booed everywhere he goes. He's going to get booed in Houston, but he'll actually get more cheers in Houston really than any other city other than Cleveland, because there's still a lot of fans here of Deshaun Watson. So he's going to get some cheers. He's going to get a lot of boos because of how he, you know, because of everything that went down off the field, but also, you know, the way he handled the breakup with the Houston Texans. But the deal is a $5 million fine, and he suspended 11 games, Bucky. So he'll be back week 13, as you mentioned, against the Texans. And that's an interesting number to me, because now, is there enough in the tank from Jacoby Brissett as a game manager and the defense and Nick Chubb to keep them in position until Deshaun Watson gets back? And is Deshaun Watson, how is he going to play after, you know, missing all of last year, most of this upcoming season, a chunk of it? Like, will he be ready to just step right in when everyone else has a lot of football under their belt?
So there are a few things to talk about when we think about the deal and that it's been done. One, 11 games is weird because it's an odd number, not an even number. Normally we've seen these deals where it's like, hey, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, right? You know, so maybe they split the baby between 10 and 12 and 11 is the number. The $5 million fine, we understood that. We knew the league was going to go after his pocket because, personally, I believe there were a lot of people that were certainly upset about the transgressions. I believe that, man, nearly half as many people were upset about the money and the contract that he signed after being embroiled in the mix. There are a lot of people who couldn't understand how he was able to get the largest fully guaranteed deal in NFL history with this stuff hanging over the head. So from a league perspective, you can't satisfy both entries. You take them off the field, you give them a hefty fine. And so that accomplished that.
What also, Buck, it's $1 million contract this year. So the way Cleveland set it up, a lot of people said, wait a minute, he's going to get suspended. But the paycheck's really not even like he won't even be hurt at all financially. So that's another part of it. Although I will say that Cleveland has done that with a couple of players. Like that's not, I know it looks suspicious and maybe some of that was to protect him. But when you look at their cap situation, you could actually understand many teams have given, have front loaded money in terms of guarantees and money up front so that they could keep the salary cap numbers low those first 2 years. So that's, that was something I think a lot of people had a problem with too, is like, wait a minute, his contract's $1 million. So he's going to be, this is going to be less than what, 50,000. We're looking at 60,000 a game is all he's going to lose. So that takes care of that too.
That does take care of some of that. And there were a lot of people that are really upset about the money and all this other stuff. So now we get that out the way. On the field, you know, this is interesting because 11 games is, it's a lot, but it doesn't completely crush the Cleveland Browns. I think when you get to 12 and more, like Lance, that's a lot. It's hard to say, hey guys, we're going to hold it together and Deshaun's going to come in riding on his white horse and save the day. I think this is a situation where if you're the Cleveland Browns, if I'm the coaching staff, in my mind, I would never say this to the players. Man, if we can get to that point, 6-5, 5-6, that'll give us a chance to make a run. And so, what can we do to make sure that Jacoby Brissett and this team is able to play 500 ball until the star quarterback comes back?
Here's your games afterwards. You've got the after the suspension, you've got Texans at Houston. Browns should be a favorite. You're at the Bengals. You'll be an underdog. Ravens at Browns. I can't even imagine always what that one's going to look like right now. Saints at Browns. Browns should be a favorite. Browns at Commanders. You expect the Browns to probably be a favorite there. And then Browns at Steelers. So he comes back, and you've got division games. In three of his six games, he does have division games. So a big impact on the division state. Like me personally, I see the Bengals as a cut above based on where I think the season is going to go. That's how I personally see it. I don't know what to think about the Ravens. The Ravens had so many injuries last year. I wasn't feeling the Ravens. And I'm still not headed into the season the same way, not really feeling the Steelers this year. But those are also blue chip teams with long histories of excellence and consistency for a long time. So to write them off with coaches like Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh, I think that would also be a mistake. So I'm really curious to see where they are. And I think you're right. If you go 6-5,
6-5,
and then you that's a win. And then you win four of the last six. So that would put you at 10 wins. I think 10 wins get you in the playoffs.
That normally has been the formula, even under a 16-game schedule. They would say the magic number is 10. Mm-hmm. 10 wins more times than not over time gets you into the playoffs. So now if you're Kevin Stefanski and the coaching staff, now that you know what you're dealing with, I think it's a lot easier now to figure out, okay, how are we going to play with our team? Is it more a Nick Chubb and these guys, we got to really grind it out. Defense, y'all have to step up. And let's just hold it down until we can get number four back. I think now that you know that, I think it's easier from a planning perspective to get this team in position to get it done. You don't freak out. You don't freak out if you lose the first two games. You're just trying to get to 500. And I think maybe you have an open and honest conversation. Hey, man, we're just trying to make a dash for the cash in the end. We're just trying to make it where we're in the hunt the last five games of the season. And Deshaun Watson has to come ready. But I will say this. Coming off of the heels of watching him in a preseason game, and I know it's a preseason game, Lance, I felt like in that preseason game, he played like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And even though he only played a couple of series and we're like, hey, it's a preseason game, he looked rusty. He looked distressed. He didn't look like, I would say, the Pro Bowl quarterback that did it three times in Houston. And so now that all of that I say is put to bed, I think now over the next 11 to 12 weeks, he really can focus in on, I got to put myself in a position where I hit the ground running. He can't be around the facilities. He can't practice or whatever. So he's going to have to get with his personal quarterback coach, but he has to go to work and he has to find a way to hit the ground running. So he's game ready when he comes back against the Texans.
And that's going to be interesting because you have to imagine that the offense you run for Jacoby Brissett and what you ask him to do is not going to be the same thing. Maybe early on it will be, but ultimately you don't want those offenses to look the same. You want to give Deshaun Watson more leeway to make plays. But then again, based on what you're talking about, Bucky, maybe that is going to be the case. Maybe the offenses are going to be the same because Deshaun Watson hitting the ground running, it's not going to be easy. Take a look at the six games before the Texans and Browns square off and Deshaun Watson's return December 4th. Here are your games. Patriots at Browns, Browns at Ravens, Bengals at Browns, Browns at Dolphins, Browns at Bills, Buccaneers at Browns. I'm telling you, those are six rough games. I mean, the Dolphins in Miami.
They're going to be holding on for dear life.
That's what I mean. Six wins. I mean, if they get to six wins, and here's a better question. Let's say they're not 6-5. Let's say they're 3-8. Let's say they don't beat the Chargers when the Chargers come to town, or they don't beat the Steelers. And those are two of the first four games that they're going to play. Let's say they're 3-8. I wonder what the vibe is with the fan base then, because you know how fans get late in the season. If they're out of it, they want you to lose everything for draft positioning. Like, fans don't want to see wins. But if you're Cleveland, there's something much more important than draft positioning, and that's getting Deshaun Watson acclimated with his new teammates, with the offense, and really, frankly, getting through this year with a chance to build momentum in the next season. So I think there's some really interesting storylines with Cleveland as it pertains to how do the Browns approach this? As you mentioned, for me, I'm saying, look, Kareem Hunt, Ernest Johnson, we need you guys because we're going to run Nick Chubb, and we need that second running back to be ready to go. I know Kareem Hunt's not happy with his contract, but you do have enough defense and running game to win games, Bucky. I mean, you've got enough if Brissett can move the chains every once in a while on third down and not turn the ball over.
Yeah, they absolutely have more than enough to be able to do it. And so I think if you are the Cleveland Browns, what you're doing is you're trying to piecemeal this thing out. Most teams always break the season up into quarters. And so for the Browns, you have to think about each quarter. If we can just go 500 during the first quarter of the season, meaning go 2-2 the first month, go 2-2 the second month, and just have a chance to get to that 6-5 or 5-6 mark, we have to do it. Now, a lot of the onus goes to the defense. Mm-hmm. Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, J.O.K., Denzel Ward. The defense has to play like a top five defense.
Yep.
And they're talented enough to do that, but they have to play at a top five level. Because if defense plays lights out combined with a dominant running game, which they should have with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, they should be able to keep these games close enough to make it fourth quarter affairs. Can you count on Jacoby Brissett to win some of those? I don't know. But defense, running game, they have to play at an A level. And everyone in the league knows they're going to run the football. The offensive line has to do it. But the trick is, and really the question is, they lost their starting center.
Yep.
They lost a backup center. Now they're hodgepodge in the middle of that offensive line. But that offensive line can't settle with the excuses. They have to play great. They have to play well for this team to make it.
Ethan Pochick is the starting center right now on the depth chart I'm looking at. He's got starting reps coming out of Seattle. I remember writing him up at LSU. I want to say my first year I was doing this for the
tall center.
Yeah, very tall center.
Yeah,
very tall. Can play multiple positions, but you know, Jedrick Wills, and Joel Batonio like him a lot on the left side. Wyatt Teller played good on the right side. Jack Conklin. Losing that center though is the brain trust. With Nick Harris, he's a very athletic center as well. However, you have a guy with starting experience, so I think you're going to be okay. I think a big part of this is going to be, what does Amari Cooper have outside of the Dallas Cowboys? Because we've seen some up and down from Amari Cooper. Can Amari Cooper summon, you know, the playmaking stuff? Can he summon the productivity? Can he and Peoples-Jones really take over? And what are you going to get also from David Bell, the rookie who was a poor tester but had good tape? He had second-round tape. Yeah. He had seventh-round testing. Yeah. And now he went in the third round. Can he step up and make plays? That's going to be key also, is that rookie.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well. Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's interesting, though, is I didn't make him as my pivotal rookie. I recently wrote an article, Bucky, 32 pivotal rookies, every team's pivotal rookie. And
well, let's talk about it. Let's get to it. Let's talk about it. So let's start right there. We'll get to the AFCs. Let's start right there. You talk about the AFC North. Who's the pivotal rookie that you're talking about?
That's what I was going to say. I gave it to Martin Emerson, and here's why. Martin Emerson, the corner out of Mississippi State. You know, I looked at David Bell from Purdue, and I just thought this is going to be a run-heavy team. I think Emerson, who is fighting with Greedy Williams for snaps right now, mm-hmm. and I think a division where you're trying to battle against the Cincinnati Bengals, where they are a dangerous team with a lot of different types of wide receivers, I think Emerson could come into play. Now, I don't love having to do pivotal rookie for the Browns because they didn't have a first pick until the third round, and they had three guys, Alex Wright, Martin Emerson, and David Bell. to be honest with you, Bucky, you know how it is with certain teams. I just don't know that a rookie is going to end up being quote unquote pivotal for their success. Now that's for that team. I want to get your opinion on the Ravens, because on the other hand, you have Tyler Linderbaum. I had to decide between Tyler Linderbaum and Kyle Hamilton, and I ended up going with Linderbaum, and I want to see what you think on here. I know Hamilton's gotten a lot of attention up to this point, and not always for great things. You know, his coverage skills have been lacking when he's had to flip the hips and run. But I mean, that was on tape. There was never a doubt that was going to be the issue for him. He's got to play downhill. But even though I think Kyle Hamilton is still a very talented player, I just feel like getting that running game going again, Tyler Linderbaum, getting him back and healthy, I think he's more pivotal than Hamilton, because the running game for me is who the Ravens are. And yes, Lamar is part of that running game, but getting J.K. Dobbins rolling again, getting the holes, the outside zone hemmed up again, I think having a guy like Tyler Linderbaum, to me, I felt like he was maybe more pivotal for their success than Kyle Hamilton, who's got a couple good safeties he's already playing with.
Yeah, Linderbaum to me is the key. Last year, there were times, man, the Baltimore Ravens couldn't get a snap. Going back 2 years in the playoffs, they couldn't get the snap. The quarterback center exchange was faulty, and so it hurt them. Now you bring in a guy who is not only a guy who's one of the best centers that we've seen in the college game for a while, even though we can talk about picking him apart because of the arm length and maybe some of the strength deficiencies. There's no doubt that he is a technician coming out of Iowa. And the last time that the Baltimore Ravens, I would say, rolled the dice a little bit on an Iowa interior block, it was Marshall Yanda. And we saw how that worked out for him. The big thing for the Ravens, getting Lamar Jackson back, having the comfort level with the rookie center. How are the pieces around the rookie center where they can take pressure off of him? Remember, Ronnie Stanley comes back off of that injury. And if he's anything like he was prior to the injury, oh, you're talking about a dominant offensive line that can pound it and smash it. Mm-hmm. Two tight ends that they drafted, Kolar and Isaiah Likely, coming from Coastal Carolina to go with Mark Andrews. This Ravens team is turning back the clock to Lamar Jackson's MVP year and the mm-hmm. style of offense that they played with the big boys on the field and just cramming it down your throat. If Tyler Linderbaum is what we think he could be, they get right back to doing it. They get right back to playing at a high level.
And that's why pivotal does not mean, in every case in my article, the guy that I think is going to be the best player long-term or even the best player this year, it's the most important. And I think if Linderbaum doesn't play well, that's also pivotal. That means they're in some trouble. So pivotal means I think he's the most important for success. Now I want to take it to Deshaun Watson. We talked about him earlier. I want to take him to go back to the former team, the Houston Texans, where I am. You know, Derek Stingley was the third pick of the draft, but the 13th pick was Kenyon Green. And then you've got Jalen Petrie that is just balling out in practice. And he's a guy that's been the most active, the most eye-opening. Kenyon Green has an injury right now. He is not playing. Derek Stingley, they're bringing along slowly. He did not play in the preseason game. I feel like, though, when it comes to pivotal, it's Kenyon Green. And the reason's simple. You got to establish a running game. Pep Hamilton wants to run the football. He wants to run it better. And I think Kenyon Green as a people mover, as a moving service who will take your boxes from point A to point B without you even wanting them to, you know, to me, I want that. That's what I want, Buck, is I want to start that attitude. And if you're going to rebuild a team, it starts with the trenches and it starts with attitude and the right attitude. And I think Kenyon Green has that. I think also Jalen Petrie has that as well. But I want to get your thought on that. The offensive lineman is, I'm wearing my Joe Moore shirt, my Joe Moore Award shirt. I stand the offensive line, obviously. However, I do think that attitude maybe is even more pivotal to install that with Pep Hamilton as opposed to Derek Stingley at the corner. Because I do think, you know, the corner position sometimes is going to take a little longer to really click in the NFL. So I'm not expecting incredible things from Derek Stingley in year one.
No, I agree with you with Kenyon Green. He's one of my favorites in the draft. He's one of my favorites because he did have that nasty attitude. I feel like Kenyon Green's display in practice has encouraged Davis Mills to make some of the statements that he has made about the Texans being maybe the league's biggest surprise. There is something that they're seeing on tape where Kenyon Green is absolutely whipping people at the line of scrimmage, where everybody feels like they can poke their chest out a little bit and say that we're going to be a little more physical, a little more aggressive when it comes to running the ball. And so I like it. I will say this, though. I know you're there in the city, but everything that I'm getting back on Derek Stingley is that Derek Stingley is that dude he was his freshman year, not the one we saw the last 2 years. The clips that I'm catching, this dude is covering like he is a trusty, cagey veteran who is unafraid. I think that is scary if they hit on him, because Lovie Smith wants to play more man-to-man. They played a lot of man last year, but now if he actually has man corners who can play man, yeah, this defense is okay, because this defense gave people problems last year.
Yeah, they would be better than expected for the first half, and then they would run out of gas. Well, now you have, as you mentioned, you've added Jalen Petrie, you've added Derek Stingley. It's interesting. There's a bunch of names on that. If I pull up their depth chart, I'm like, wait, I wrote this guy. Wait, I wrote this guy. This guy. They got a bunch of guys who are kind of washouts in contract one that did not live up to the hype necessarily. But listen to some of these names that you'll be like, oh, he plays there? He plays there? I'll give you an example. You've got, well, Tremont Smith, who was a cornerback with good special teams potential and value. MJ Stewart, you remember MJ Stewart coming out of NC, your guy. So he's on the roster right now. Fabian Moreau out of UCLA is over there. You know Eric Murray. Steven Nelson is going to be one of the starting corners. Isaac Yiadom, the long cornerback out of Boston College, is on the team. Jalen Reeves-Maben out of Detroit. Blake Cashman. Yeah. I can't remember who drafted Blake. Jake Hansen, like a bunch of dudes that I remember were top four round picks. Rasheem the Dream Green from USC is on the is on the roster. So a bunch of guys who were drafted, Philip Dorsett, who was a first round pick. There's a bunch of guys who didn't get it done at other locations. And Nick Caserio is basically saying height, weight, speed, length. Let's go get the traits and let's see if we can get a reclamation project going here.
I mean, some that the Patriots have been able to do, some that other teams have been able to do. Just because it doesn't work out in one spot doesn't mean that the player can't play. Put him in a situation in a system that might extenuate their skills, and you may uncover the player that many were excited about during the draft process. For the Texans, this is a team, man, you watch them every week because they're right there locally, but I feel like they played hard. I feel like they really responded to Lovie Smith, particularly on defense. Mm-hmm. If he is able to get the rest of the team going, and if Pelp Hamilton continues to do what he's done with previous quarterbacks, Davis Mills is going to make another leap in year two. And we're talking about a very talented, talented prospect coming out. He just didn't have enough college games, 11 starts, I want to say, coming out of Stanford. Well, now if Pelp Hamilton gets him going, yeah, look, it may not look pretty, but there's no reason why we can't talk about them being one of these, I call them hustle hard teams. They don't beat you necessarily with their talent, but they beat you just because they outwork you for four quarters. They have enough talent to win in that regard.
Look out for Nico Collins, too. I think you're going to see a much bigger year in year two from Nico. Did not play in 2020 because of a COVID opt-out. So I think you're going to see a big jump in productivity and talent from Nico Collins. Let's take it to the Titans. I want to see what you think the answer is here. I'm going to give you two names. Treylon Burks as the most pivotal, or Roger McCreary, cornerback, as most pivotal for the Titans, based on what you know about the Titans, where they stand in the AFC, where they stand in the AFC South. Who do you think is the most pivotal guy, in your opinion, between these two? Because this is who it came down to for me.
I think Treylon Burks is the most pivotal, but here's why I'm worried about him being the most pivotal. They gave up a proven commodity in A.J. Brown, big physical receiver who was their number one receiver, who really worked well with Ryan Tannehill. Now, they may have thought that they got a clone in Treylon Burks, but the reports that I've seen coming out of Tennessee have not been great on the young prospect from Arkansas. Questions about his conditioning, his fitness level, not always available to practice and finish practices, and separation. Can he separate enough? So all the things that were concerns a little bit for a guy who appeared to have some big body blow up potential, those concerns have been realized. And so can he figure it out quickly in the season and give them some of the production that AJ Brown used to give them on the perimeter?
I think one thing that's interesting is he had issues with being heavy and out of condition, heavier than he wanted to be and out of condition in the initial rookie mini camp, came back into camp, had lost weight. So he's actually lighter now. He blamed it, but he took accountability. He said, my conditioning wasn't where it needed to be. Now, he did say he had an asthma issue and he had to push through asthma. As somebody who's been an asthmatic my whole life, you don't really push through asthma. You take your medicine and you're good for the rest of the day. I mean, there's a difference. But I could sit and run right now and immediately be huffing and puffing and tell you my asthma's got me. No, that's being out of shape. That's not, it's not always asthma when you're out of shape. So I think asthma may have been an issue, but he also said, no, my conditioning was an issue. So we'll see if he grows up. He did show some positive signs from camp where he came in lighter when they made it into camp. Because when he went into that original rookie mini camp, as you're mentioning, Bucky, that's where the negative stuff came from, is he was not, it wasn't, everything you said was an issue. I know there's been some more positivity about his conditioning since he came back. And sometimes guys just need to learn how to be a pro. And maybe that will happen for him. I made Roger McCreary for some of the same reasons. I just think they've got there's some holes in that secondary. And I think McCreary is going to be very, very important. If Tennessee wants to play at a high level, they're going to have to cover better on the back end. So I actually, and at the end of the day, the Titans are going to be a run first team anyway. So I ended up saying McCreary over Burks, but I thought that was, to me, the tough choice. Let me go to the AFC West. This one was hard. Sky Moore, George Karlaftis, and Trent McDuffie. You have three guys that I think are going to play important roles this year for the Chiefs. I went with McDuffie, but I could make an argument for Karlaftis or Sky Moore with the quickness. I just feel like, okay, I'm playing the Raiders, I'm playing the Chargers, and I'm playing the Chiefs. That's a lot of throwing that's going to happen. And all those teams other than the Chiefs just got better as it came to their passing attack.
Yeah, they all got better. This division is absolutely loaded. The offensive firepower. I mean, you talk about the quarterbacks. You talk about the playmakers on the perimeter. You have to have guys on the outside that can hold their own in these one-on-one matchups. Now, I would say that Karlaftis, to me, is maybe a more valuable or maybe a more pivotal piece, because one thing that I know is if I knock the quarterback down, I don't have to worry about covering. Mm-hmm. And even though Karlaftis is more of a power player than a finesse mover, he has pass rush ability. And he is also one of those relentless guys off the edge. If he can do what I would call the Trey Hendrickson thing, right, where he's able to just work hard, outwork him, hustle sideline to sideline, make plays in that regard, because that's how he did it at Purdue. And if he can give them double-digit sacks playing alongside Chris Jones and opposite Frank Clark, that's a perfect, perfect scenario for the Kansas City Chiefs to be able to deal with what they're going to face in this division this year.
I don't have a problem with it, and I really struggle with that one because, you know, I think you could also make a case for Sky Moore if you wanted to about, you know, being able to replace that slot target, a guy who's really kind of a game-ready player as well. So I think that one's a very interesting one. The Chargers, we already know. You're going to have to go read. Oh, I'll just tell you, it's Zion Johnson. That's a no-brainer. Raiders are tougher. Don't you think it's Zion, or you think somebody else is more pivotal?
Oh, no. I'm just telling you, down there, they're raving about Zion Johnson.
Zion's going to fit in great.
They're raving about him like they raved about Rashawn Slater last year. They feel like they got two good young players to build around. So now you think about those two, Corey Lindsey. There's a lot of reasons for optimism. People always look to the outside. One of the reasons the Chargers may be better is because they're going to be able to dominate on the inside, which also means they may be able to run the ball. So my fantasy tip is, hey, go get Isaiah Spiller. He may have a gang of carries running that time.
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget now, his A&M offensive line, they replaced four starters last year, and they were not good to start the season. I think that caused some of his hesitation. I think the Isaiah Spiller you saw the year before is probably the one you're going to see with the Chargers, and that is going to be better than the one that was on tape on 2021 that we looked at. So that's a good call, Buck. That's a good late round sleep or undrafted free agent to keep an eye. A free agent for your fantasy leagues to keep an eye on. I totally agree. Here's the hardest one of the entire article: the Jets. I've got Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Jermaine Johnson, and Breece Hall. Four picks inside the first 36. Who is the most pivotal of those of those players. You got to have a wide receiver for your quarterback. You need somebody to finally defend on the outside at cornerback. You need rush. They've needed rush forever. And Breece Hall is a three-down running back. So who is the most pivotal? I thought this was the toughest decision I had to make.
I would say Breece Hall. Now, given the situation with Zach Wilson, even if he returns early in the season, they're not going to be able to have these fancy plans that they have for him based on the knee injury. He may not be able to get on the perimeter. He may have to operate with a knee brace on, which will limit his mobility. The best way that you can help him is you got to have a dominant running game. So Breece Hall and Michael Carter have to be able to take turns kind of grinding it out and catching passes and doing things in this offense. Breece Hall is terrific. When you watch him, to me, he reminds me of a little poor man's Le'Veon Bell in Le'Veon's prime. Mm-hmm. If he can give them some of that RB1, wide receiver 2 stuff, this offense will continue to be successful with Joe Flacco at the helm.
I'm going to take it to the NFC, and I'm going to make it hard for you again. Evan Neal or Kayvon Thibodeau? I had to figure out my – oh, remember, Kayvon's listening probably. So if you want that smoke again.
He's tough. He said the game was slow.
I know.
He said the game was slow, my guy. Like, I try and tell him, like, Kayvon, don't give him the quotables. Try and stay up the quotable.
You're in New York.
Ah, man. So let's go Evan Neal being pivotal. Because it's pivotal, because if I'm Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, I am looking at my quarterback, Daniel Jones. And I'm trying to make an assessment and determination on whether he's going to be the franchise guy.
Yep.
I'm worried because right now we're having the coach speak, hey, man, we just got to make sure Tyrod is ready. Ready for what? Like, ready for an injury? Like, the backup always has to be ready in that regard. When you're giving him more reps, it might mean that you're a little insecure about what you have at the QB1 spot. And so the offensive line is going to be pivotal. Because regardless of who plays quarterback for this team, they're going to have to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage because you need to run the ball with Saquon. You also need to make sure that the quarterback has a fortress set up in front of him.
That was my same thought, too. I mean, as much as they need rush, they've got to fix the offensive line. They've got to get it right because your last, you know, two of your most important first-round picks, Saquon and Daniel Jones. And I'm to the point now where I don't think no matter what Saquon does, I just don't know that they're going to pay him with the Giants. But you still need him to be successful. And Daniel Jones, for everything that you mentioned, that's why Andrew Thomas getting better in year 3 and Evan Neal stepping in and being more than functional but solid right tackle, it is critical for the Giants. So that's why I think from a pivotal standpoint, no doubt, you at least get a look at Daniel Jones with a functional to maybe even slightly above average, maybe offensive line. You'd at least like average. So you can see, okay, what does Daniel Jones look like at least with an average line before we cast him off and look at another quarterback? I think you have to know that one. Now, another team that I thought was kind of interesting and a little bit tougher was the Eagles. Jordan Davis or Nakobe Dean? So you got Nakobe Dean who can run around, but part of his success is he gets to play behind a guy like Jordan Davis. Can Jordan Davis, they've got a decent defensive line. Who is more pivotal for the Eagles' success? Would it be Jordan Davis or would it be Nakobe Dean in your opinion between those two players?
Nakobe Dean has been the buzz of the camp. And it's so funny. Because I did this and I knew when I watched him up close and personal at the combine, I knew I shouldn't get caught up in watching him, seeing the size and seeing just how small he was in comparison to everybody else, because that would take away from the evaluation that you see on film. On film, the dude looks like the best player on their defense. And Lance, that's saying something because I've been down in Jacksonville and I've watched Trayvon Walker absolutely put his hands on folks like a grown man playing with kids. And I've seen what Jordan Davis is doing, walking offensive linemen back in one-on-one drills. Quay Walker making plays as a sideline-to-sideline player. But when you turn on the Georgia tape, the best player on their defense was Nakobe Dean. And you're hearing the conversations coming out of Philly like, man, this dude has jumped right in, and it ain't too big for him. He's doing what he's always done. And so, to me, he's pivotal because they haven't had a second-level playmaker at linebacker, man, in a long time.
I think you also have to look at the division. Washington has a player in Antonio Gibson who can catch the ball out of the backfield. You've got Dallas who, you know, can spread you out and force your linebackers to match up. Yeah, I think when you look at how they're built, that's really critical too. In terms of the division and N'Kobe Dean. Yeah, that's a good one. Let me give you a couple more before we jet. This is one that I struggled with. I've got Drake London as a first round player. I made Desmond Ridder the third rounder, though, the most pivotal. And here's why. I went back to the Texans and I said, you know what? Third round quarterback Davis Mills did not start the season. It was Tyrod Taylor. But the Texans got an idea of Davis Mills in year one. What about the idea that Cincinnati at some point, Mariota's just a bridge guy. That's all he's going to be. So what about the idea that maybe it's going to be more pivotal that the Falcons get the same type of look on Ridder so they have an idea of what they have as early as year one, the same way the Texans, who are also a rebuild team at the time, and the Falcons are clearly a rebuild team right now. Maybe you get a look at who Desmond Ridder is. Is he that guy? Does he have what it takes that we can say, okay, cool, we're going to go into next year, because you're going to have a high pick, Falcons. I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're going to have a high pick. So if you're sitting there looking at one of these top quarterback prospects, wouldn't you like to know if you've got a guy in Ridder that might be able to allow you to pick a different position or even move that pick? I mean, how valuable would that be as well?
Oh, I think it'd be a tremendous value. I think it's really important and imperative for this team to know what they have in Desmond Ridder. If Marcus Mariota falters at all, or if the team is just bad the first half of the season, you got to spend the second half trying to figure out what you have at quarterback. Now, you want to make those decisions with Desmond Ridder compared to the quarterbacks and a star-studded class that we should see in 2023. But still, you want to see if the young guy can play. Got a chance to watch him against the Detroit Lions in preseason action. Didn't look too big for him. The completion rate and the efficiency wasn't what you wanted it to be, but you certainly can work with it and build around it. And so it's just one of those things that you have to continue to see. Can the young guy play?
Here's a couple more for you before we go. And of course, if you guys want to read it, you can go to NFL.com and read the 32 pivotal rookies for each team. Once again, pivotal is up for debate. You can define it how you want to. I defined it in the article so you can see. New Orleans Saints. I'm kind of giving you some teams with A or B. Trevor Penning or Chris Olave? I thought this one was a tougher one. Who is most pivotal for the Saints this year?
This is a tough one. Normally in these situations, I always skew for the trench warriors over the big play guys on the perimeter. My thing with Penning is this. I mean, when's he going to cut out all the silliness at the line of scrimmage, the fighting and all that other stuff? I thought that was just a Senior Bowl, I'm a tough guy deal. At some point, man, he can't engage in this kind of behavior for this team to continue to win. That said, he's important because the offensive line, the running game, the Saints' ability to play what we call big boy football is critical with Jameis Winston. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in a situation where I have to throw 30-plus times. I want to be in a situation where maybe I want to throw because we have favorable matchups. And so there's a difference in that, meaning that I don't want the defense dictating the terms. I want to dictate the terms to how we attack them in the pass game. And the only way we can do that is by running the ball effectively. And then when we do elect a pass, we want to make sure that the quarterback is upright in the pocket.
Here's another one for you. The 49ers, Spencer Burford, which that name is going to surprise a lot of people who aren't paying attention to San Francisco, but the fourth round rookie is starting at right guard in that zone heavy running game. And that's something that, you know, they need to be able to run the football well. So you got a rookie fourth rounder at right guard or backup outside pass rusher who has buzzed over at Niners camp, according to people who I've spoken with who have been out there at camp, Drake Jackson. So which one of those two guys do you think is most pivotal? Drake Jackson, the pass rusher, Spencer Burford, the starting rookie offensive lineman?
That's even. We've seen the Niners do a lot in the run game with just unheralded players at multiple spots, front line, in the backfield. So I'm going to go with the pass rusher, Drake Jackson. Drake Jackson was a hard evaluation because it depended on which Drake Jackson you were looking at. It kind of reminds you of when people were talking about listening to Luther Vandross. Was it Big Luther or Little Luther. And so that's the big team with Drake Jackson. With Drake Jackson, what you want to know? Hey, if
it's, here and if it, now.
Yeah. If it's big Drake Jackson, you're like, okay, he's heavy-handed. He's not as athletic, but man, he can get after it.
Big Drake was better than small Drake.
Yeah, kind of like Luther. Big Luther was better. I think with Drake, he was out of position because when they made him lighter, they put him in space and did all this other stuff. I felt like he was better when he was heavy-handed near the point of attack.
Yeah, I went with Drake Jackson over Burford. I was set to go with Burford, but the fact is, Kyle Shanahan has been, you know, he's been on offensive lines where, and has really learned, as you mentioned, you can find guys. You can find guys. They have to have certain athletic traits. You coach them up, and you can find guys to plug in. And Burford is very important. Clearly, he's important in terms of interior protection and helping the running game get going. I'm not debating that. I just think when it comes to rush, you know, if you're going to prioritize a guard or a pass rusher, well, all day, the more pivotal player is going to be the guy that can go and get the quarterback. So if they're able to get the quarterback with Nick Bosa on one side and then sub-packaged rush with Drake Jackson on the other side, that's just so critical to high-end success. So I think, especially when you're playing the Rams or Tampa Bay, if you're trying to play or Aaron Rodgers at the highest level, you got to have rush from both sides. So, yeah, I ended up going with Drake Jackson there as well. For people who want to check out the article, it's at NFL.com. It's 32 most or the 32 pivotal rookies, one for each team. And go take a look at your favorite team and hit me on Twitter. Tell me if you agree or disagree. I know you're going to be a hater anyway, so just come and bring it. It doesn't matter to me. I got a mute button and I clap back, so it's either way, I'm good.
Hey, so look, I've been looking at Hard Knocks. And the love for Malcolm Rodriguez.
What?
Rodrigo.
Yeah.
Rodrigo.
He can play.
Lance. So here's the thing. I remember watching him, and it's one of those things like in TV, we don't have enough time to really talk about everybody, right? So we kind of hear the buzz, and, oh, he's going to be a fourth or fifth round pick. But then you're like, wait, man, I saw the tape, man. This dude makes – he's a wrestling background, tough and physical,
State
whatever.
State champ wrestler.
Right.
Yeah. So, like high end wrestler.
Like, so Lance, I'm watching Hard Knocks and I'm watching the tape, and he is a heat seeking missile when it comes to contact. And the way that the coaches are getting excited, it's easy to see why they're excited when they play the tape back.
Lance, no doubt.
Instincts, his ability to come down and engage. I mean, he is an old school, square bodied inside backer. He wants all the smoke inside.
But he's 5'11", 232 with 30 1/8 arms. So he's a short arm guy. He has good size. I mean, 5'11", 232 is not bad. Yeah. Sam Mills type size. But when I watched him, I swear on everything, I'm like, man, I feel like I'm watching a more athletic version of Zach Thomas. The way Zach Thomas used to seek and destroy, and the way the big ass neck that he's got, like you talked about, square body, brick mailbox is what he looks like. But his ability, I mean, it's a guy with 39.5 vert. He had explosive. A 10-foot broad jump, super explosive. So you take explosive, tough, instinctive, and he made a ton of plays in the passing game and his ball production when he dropped in coverage because he's instinctive. His tackle numbers were off the charts. Like everything that you would like, he just didn't hit some physical dimensions. He falls down the board to sixth round. But for me, Bucky, I projected him in the fourth because the fourth round is where you put these high-end players who just lack some physical traits. I thought you stick him in the fourth round. And I got to say, I'm not surprised that Malcolm Rodriguez is popping off this early in camp because he's a really good football player. That's just what he is.
And I think it's another reminder that when we're doing this thing and we're going through the draft, that you can't get caught up in just the workout warrior part of the evaluation. You got to look at the tape. And, man, he was a great player at Oklahoma State. I want to say in that defense that Jim Knowles had, he might have been the jack, which was kind of like the guy that moved around and did a bunch of different things. Mm-hmm. I just remember the thump that he brings. And so when you talked about the explosiveness, the 39-inch vertical, the 10-foot broad jump, combined with the leverage that he learned and displayed as a wrestler, Oh, he's an all-day sucker. And because today's game, we don't have true fullbacks, and we got these H-backs that are masquerading as lead blockers, he is absolutely obliterating them in the hole.
Bucky, these are my strengths from the scouting report. Team captain and brain of the defense, plays with a healthy level of suspicion pre-snap, instinctive feel for blocking schemes. And by the way, that's super important to recognize blocking schemes and to know what a running game is doing, what it's supposed to look like is critical. Stays clean, sifting through the through traffic in the box. Like, guys didn't hit him when he was sifting. Made 397 tackles over 4 years. Elite wrestling background shows up in his tackling. Targets thighs and wraps to finish with strong core. Forced 13 fumbles. Early influencer on punt and kick cover teams. Like, it was all there. The tape showed exactly who he's going to be. Now, he's got to play. He looks good on Hard Knocks. He looks good in the preseason. But I have no doubt that he's going to end up making a bunch of plays. Hey, I want to mention this, too. I was watching this before I came on, just as a little kicker here, a sports documentary. I'm watching the Manti Te'o documentary on Netflix, Untold.
I've been getting texts about it. Like,
wild. I didn't realize that he was – I don't keep up with recruiting as much as some people. So I didn't know he was, like, set to go to USC, and he had this conversation right before he was going to go announce, and he felt this pull to Notre Dame based on a conversation that someone said. He's a person of great faith, you know, and – you know, from him going to USC, I don't remember. You were in town when he signed, probably, right? With Notre Dame. Was there a bunch of buzz about him being a USC Trojan back in the day?
Well, he always was like the cast me out. I think people have to go back and realize, like, the hoax overshadowed what people talked about. He was expected to be a big-time player. You know, he made a ton of plays for that defense. That team played in the national title game, right, against Alabama.
Got smashed,
Yeah, he was the focal point of that defense. And when you watch them, like, now his career, I mean, he still carved out a pretty long career for someone who didn't ever really start. But look, man, he was everything there. Little square box body coming down, making plays, had great instincts. But
sounds like Malcolm Rodriguez.
Yeah, this situation overshadowed his stuff heading into the draft. And, you know, without giving away the Netflix thing, like, it's really unfortunate. I would say that's the best way to describe it. It's just really unfortunate the way that it played out, because it certainly left scars and did damage to him and his reputation and all that other stuff. So it's great that it came out. But yeah, he was a cast me out.
Yeah, big time. I mean, it was conversations about him or Manziel, I remember, for that Heisman Trophy. And that's a linebacker. And he had a lot of buzz for Heisman Trophy that year. So really interesting doc so far. I have not finished it. I'm in the early stages. But one of those guys that when the draft, there's always storylines that are bubbling. That one happened to be on the surface. But there's always stuff behind the scenes going on in a lot of these guys' lives, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, sometimes troubling, sometimes, you know, heroic or exciting, or lots of stories for us to get into down the road, certainly. And hopefully you guys enjoyed some of the stories about some of these guys, or at least the way we see them headed into the season. But, man, I'm excited about this year, Buck.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And I can't wait to bring you back on, because I can't wait to start digging into this class. Everyone's talking about these quarterbacks. I got a chance to be around Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, some of these other guys at Elite 11. Man, that's different. That conversation that we had about the quarterbacks this year won't be the same conversation next year, because there's a lot of buzz about what is to come. But one thing that I know is to come, we will get LZ back on the Move to Six podcast here in a few weeks, just talking about what's going on before we get into the college football season. Thanks so much for stepping in for DJ today. Lance, I appreciate you, my man.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.